Here's one for you.
Which sport combines elements of ballet, acrobatics, and real drama? Well, it is, of course, rhythmic gymnastics. And in this episode of Inland Visions, we're going to find out just what it takes to be the best of the best. Irina Alexandrovna, thank you so much for finding time to speak to us today. Now, rhythmic gymnastics, as you full well know, combines elements of ballet and acrobatics, but it's also a performance. What makes rhythmic gymnastics so unique as a sport?
Rhythmic gymnastics is a sport with direct links to ballet. Here's what I mean. We believe it was created by Isadora Duncan, an American who performed in Russia at the Mariinsky Theater. She was the first dancer to perform on demi-point, not on point. She was also the first to adopt a manner of movement known as free natural body movement. Waves, soft arm swings, those types of movements were outside of ballet technique at the time. Ballet had strictly codified positions. These days, ballet allows for freer body movements and arm positions, which is something they borrowed from rhythmic gymnastics. We also borrowed a lot of choreographic motions from ballet, so we're related that way. During an individual routine which lasts 90 seconds or a group routine which lasts 150 seconds, top-class rhythmic gymnasts perform a mini-play. This showcases the dancers' motions, apparatus work, body movements, a certain number of complex elements, while at the same time channeling the spirit of the music. Let me give you an example. Lala Kramarenko used the overture to the Queen of Spades. It's a very complex piece of music telling the story of two people in love and whose lives end in madness. I'm talking about Lisa and Herman. You have 90 seconds to tell this whole story. The same with group routines. At the last Olympics, our dancers used the Polotsev dances and a piece by Stravinsky. These two are very different kinds of music, but our athletes managed to create a truly Russian image in just 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
And you've also made a huge contribution yourself to rhythmic gymnastics. Originally, it was about doing complex elements to music, but then you introduced very fancy costumes and you turned it into a real show. Why was it so important for you to turn the sport into such an artistic performance?
Everything must converge. During my two stints as vice president of the technical committee, and back then, Egle Abruzzini from Italy was president. She was a very knowledgeable and cultured woman. Initially, she was opposed to all those sequins and multicolored costumes, but I succeeded in convincing her. It's about girls, after all, and I told her that rhythmic gymnastics should be rooted in aesthetics, especially since, as I said to her, her home country is the birthplace of great designers. It would be great if every country tried harder to make their gymnastics beautiful and if all dancers had costumes individually tailored to each routine and exercise. She agreed with me. That was when we began presenting beautiful routines set to beautiful music and showcasing beautiful leotards.
Well, rhythmic gymnastics, like many sports, is becoming more demanding and more complex. How is it possible for modern gymnasts to keep pushing the boundaries of what's humanly possible?
I wouldn't agree with that. It's only here in Russia that we're pushing the boundaries of what's humanly possible. Unfortunately, after Madame Abruzzini left, there have been situations where everything instead got simpler. People were complaining about too much complexity. Even today, we got a document saying that a number of elements named after Russian gymnasts, which are very interesting and beautiful, have already been performed by many athletes around the world, have been removed from the code for some reason. I was told they were bad for the health of athletes. I don't agree with that, of course. When we first proposed and showed those elements, the medical commission at the time gave the green light. If you compare them to artistic gymnastics, a simple somersault on the beam is a highly complex element that can hardly be described as particularly healthy. And yet, gymnasts are allowed to perform such elements on the beam, on bars, and on the vault to get higher scores. While doing something like that in rhythmic gymnastics is supposed to be too harmful? I disagree. And yet, these elements have been removed, which is a shame.
You've said previously that international standards have been hindering the development of rhythmic gymnastics, whereas Russia, oppositely, conversely, has been helping push the bar higher each year. But now that Russian rhythmic gymnasts are out of the picture, what effect do you think this will have on the sport internationally?
We have adapted by coming up with our own Russian code. We're allowing gymnasts to show everything they can do and everything they can think of without restrictions. Everything is allowed, but they must perform these elements without the slightest fault to get points. We don't have small faults, medium faults, or major faults. We only award points for motions which are executed correctly. This way, athletes and coaches know that they can only stick to the things they can perform right without mistakes. This is why Russian gymnastics keeps evolving. We've changed our rules to allow routines without any apparatus. Freehand exercises were somehow forgotten, even though they're very pretty. They go back to the routines performed by Duncan herself, who didn't work with the ball or anything else. Girls can now use their body motions without any apparatus to demonstrate the freedom of movement, the freedom of emotion that rhythmic gymnastics is all about, without having to worry about throwing, catching, or rolling any apparatus. We believe that's very important. We've also reintroduced the rope, because rope exercises are very good for athletes. My student, Alina Kabaeva, suggested reintroducing the rope, which we agreed to do. So now we have six different events in the Russian code. All of our regions, and there are more than 80 of them, have adjusted to the new rules, both for individual and group routines, as well as junior competitions. Everyone is happy, and all the kids are thriving as they compete across all these different events.
It's a well-known fact that you only take the creme de la creme, the best children, under your wing. What is it you have to see in a child for you to take them on?
It's true that initially we pick the best of the best, but when a girl starts training, you need to look at how she feels about her routines and rhythmic gymnastics in general. Does she love gymnastics? Is she expressive, hardworking? Does she try hard to do what her coach tells her to do? Does she have what it takes to win and become a champion? There are many factors at play. This physiology too. How flexible are they? How far can they stretch? Some gymnasts make it to the national team but break under pressure, discouraged by the fact that expressiveness must come from technique and a huge amount of time perfecting the routine.
And that brings me on nicely to my next question. Some psychologists have said that when you train children as young as 3 to 5 years old, this almost deprives them of their childhood. But you've said that these children, they're really happy, they're genuinely happy. How do you find the balance between getting the best performance out of a child on the mat while also letting them enjoy their childhood?
I have a 2-year-old granddaughter. I recently got a video of her dancing with a little scarf, just on her own, and singing a folk song. Nobody taught her that. It's in their blood. They enjoy these things. You can't force 3- or 4-year-olds to work hard. They train only for 30 or 40 minutes. They're not made to do complex things or struggle towards something. It's like a game to them. Over time, however, this evolves into mastery. Not everyone will make this transition. Those who can't keep up switch to a different sport, which is also fine, and something we support. Anyway, it all starts with a girl learning how to hear music, how to make elegant moves and walk gracefully. All these things are very important for future brides, mothers and a woman.
So do you have to be born a rhythmic gymnast, or can you become one if you work really hard at it?
No, you can't achieve it by learning alone. You need to be born with this talent. However, as I told one of my gymnasts today, going uphill is very hard and it takes a long time. But rolling downhill only takes a moment, just 1, 2, or 3 days. That's why you need to keep working all the time. Still, without talent, without certain physiological and emotional qualities, there's nothing we can do. We can nurture these qualities.
Well, part of the beauty, or for me at least, of rhythmic gymnastics is the ability to tell a story through movement and music. And that, to me, would seem it requires some sort of a self-reflection and maybe even life experience. How do you teach this to children of such a young age?
Kids at the age of 3 or 5 can have a very clear picture of what is or what can be. They can say very interesting things sometimes. Let me tell you, children understand a lot, even at this age. If you give them music and you teach them motions appropriate for their age, they'll be able to express themselves beautifully. Even adult gymnasts shouldn't be made to work with something that doesn't fit their character. Alina Kabayeva, for instance, could never work with stern, tragic music. Even when we used Carmen, we selected happier, more upbeat parts like Gypsy Dance, all in 90 seconds. But that was when she was a grown-up. Young girls I work with are all very excitable and expressive, so they should be given appropriate music. A young child certainly shouldn't be made to work with a concerto or a symphony that they can't channel well, even if a coach likes it. The coach should be guided by the child's feeling, but it takes a gifted coach to do that.
Well, as you said, a lot of this does obviously depend on the expressiveness of the gymnasts. How do you get them to reveal their true emotions during the performance? Or do the emotions come out as they're doing the performance themselves naturally?
Yes, you're right. You need to get into a state of flow. That's what I always say. The flow of music, the flow of what the music is telling you. The job of a coach is to explain to the gymnasts what she is supposed to feel working with this or that music piece. Take the Polozian dances. It opens with beautiful and tender Eastern girls dancing. The coach needs to explain this, that the athlete is supposed to smile and move very softly and flexibly when performing to it. The second part is a dance of male warriors. They jump and they make all kinds of sharp movements. The contrast between a girl and a warrior creates the desired effect. But again, it all starts with the coach analyzing these emotions. Who will then pull the gymnast into this flow? Unfortunately, it's not always possible.
To make it in this sport, these young gymnasts not only need talent, but also a trusted and experienced coach to help them nurture it. So what do you tell your students before they go out onto the mat for a competition?
I use the system which helped me a lot back in the day when I was preparing for the Olympic Games. Miss Vinner kept telling us that we should focus on our own thing, get into the flow, and just do our part. This is a system which has stood the test of time at the Olympics, so my students hear the same words from me as they go out onto the floor.
And what approach do you take to giving your students feedback after a performance?
First, we focus on the things they did well. It's super important. I think for kids to know what went well and what went poorly, I start by highlighting the good things, but then we immediately proceed to analyze the drawbacks. I believe it's very important to figure out right away what was good and what was bad, and correct the mistakes. This is my method. Kids need to know where they succeeded and what could have been done better so that they can fix it immediately.
Is it true that each gymnast has their own speciality, or do they have to excel at everything in order to succeed in the sport?
Some children have a special gift. Some have certain peculiarities in their nature or physique. I personally have 5 gymnasts on the floor, and I try to bring out a personality in each one of them. Each one has a special place. Each girl has her own strengths. By combining them, I get what I need.
And what does it take to be a parent of a rhythmic gymnast?
The parents of a true champion are like my parents. They don't interfere, they never tell the coach what to do, but entrust their child completely to her mentor so that they can form a tandem and have the right chemistry.
Now, and how do you teach your students to really show their emotions on the carpet? Or is this something that comes out naturally during a repertoire?
I bring out different emotions in my students. It's not always big smiles, but sometimes I want them to feel angry or combative so that they're aware of their emotional range and learn to embrace it. They must respond emotionally to everything if they want their performance to come from the heart. And when they feel that everything's going well, they naturally break into a smile and their eyes light up. It's the most natural way to achieve it.
The renowned Russian trainer Irina Viner, she said that there comes a point where a coach can no longer teach their students something and they have to give their students to another trainer for them to continue developing. How do you tell when that time has come, and is it difficult to part ways?
I completely agree with Ms. Viner. I've been there myself. My first personal trainer passed me to Vera Stelbums, who is a top trainer in Omsk. And then Ms. Stelbums, who has plenty of experience and who has trained many Olympic medalists herself, in turn, passed me to Irina Viner. I'd say you need to feel it on a subconscious level. It takes a lot of professionalism for a coach to realize that the child is developing and needs to move on. It's very valuable when coaches can do that, and it's something we should all learn from them.
Some of your children even call you mom or mother because you don't only just teach them rhythmic gymnastics, you also help mentor them in a certain way, even bring them up. Where do you draw the line between the coach, Irina, and the mother, Irina?
Nowhere. The mother stops nowhere. That's because children have a very strong sense of justice and in some ways are very cruel. What I mean is that they immediately notice whether they're being told the truth or not. Children, especially little ones, immediately realize if they're being given a pat on the head for nothing and they move away from a person who does that. When, however, you tell them that they make mistakes, when you tell them to do something over and over again, when you make a comparison that may seem unpleasant to an outsider, I can afford to do that. It shows them that. Here's an example. I told one of my girls, look at yourself. You're so pretty. You have luscious eyebrows. You have blue eyes. You're a real beauty. But you move like a cow. And so she's forced to choose. Will she be a beauty with blue eyes or a cow? She chooses to be a beauty, of course, and immediately does what I ask her to do. Their feelings may be hurt at first, but then they come and hug you, thank you, and wait for your kiss. When they tell me I'm their second mother during competitions, it makes life worth living. When a kid calls you mom, it makes your life worthwhile.
I can only imagine. You've also said, Irina, that it's not so much the competition that matters, it's overcoming yourself. But winning must still be important in these events, getting a place on the podium.
You see, overcoming yourself is an Olympic motto, just like faster, higher, stronger. So you never look at your competition. Look at yourself. Will you be up to the task you and your coach set for you? If you are, you'll win first place. This is obvious.
Yeah, and not just in rhythm gymnastics, but maybe for life itself. Finally, I just want to ask you one last question. You're one of the biggest, if not the biggest name in rhythmic gymnastics, but you often say, I'm nobody, and you have that in your autobiography. Why?
It's true that we're very successful. I've led Russia, with God's help, of course, to 51 Olympic medals and 416 world and European championship medals. This is a significant result. But I know that every person who has reached certain heights received this gift, this talent from up above. I always tell my students I'm just a conduit. I'm told by a higher power what to do, so I can relate it to you. And this is what I tell my girls. As soon as you get off the podium, you need to tell yourself right back to square one. When you're on the podium, you're the champion. But when you're back down, you're nobody again. This is how it goes.
The grace and beauty with which these gymnasts perform belies a tremendous amount of hard work, hours of training, and unwavering commitment. To find out just how they keep it together under such pressure, we ask Lala Kramarienka.
Lala, tell me, when you perform, how much of it is about competing with others, and how much of it is about competing with yourself and pushing your own limits?
Our main challenge is, of course, to push ourselves to the limit. Irina Alexandrovna keeps telling us that being yourself is part of the Olympic motto. Then there's competing with the other athletes. At the end of the day, it's about proving to yourself what you can achieve.
Apart from the physical side, can you tell me a bit about the more unusual aspects of your training? Irina Vina said that some gymnasts even learn poetry off by heart.
It's up to you if you want to learn poetry by heart, but Irina Alexandrovna fosters our spiritual development as well. We go to the Bolshoi Theater to see ballets like Swan Lake, Don Quixote, and The Nutcracker. Those who enjoy it learn poetry. Gymnastics is an art form, and we channel our history in our dances. Each person has their own way to express emotion.
Lala, do you watch the performances of your competitors, and if so, why?
I do. My hero is Alina Kabaeva. I keep watching her performances and always glean something new and interesting from them. There are other girls around the world who are doing cool stuff in terms of body movements and apparatus work too, so we need to be aware of what's going on. We pick up and adapt some of these elements.
And finally, you look so confident when you're out there. You have this brilliant smile. Can you tell us what's going on inside before you perform?
The coach's attitude matters a lot. You get nervous, of course, which is fine. All athletes get nervous, but your trainers, your parents, and your family help you overcome the emotional turmoil. In my case, it's my twin sister Diana. We're very close. My family is all about sports, so it's all thanks to my trainers and my family.
Lala, thank you very much for speaking to us. Very interesting. Thank you.